Developing a Winning Attitude. Commentary for the August 29, 2020 Sabbath School Lesson. By Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry. www.visitstillwaters.com. You, however, know all about my teaching, my way of life, my purpose, faith, patience, love, endurance, persecutions, sufferings, what kinds of things happened to me in Antioch, Iconium, and Lystra, the persecutions I endured. Yet the Lord rescued me from all of them. In fact, everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted, while evildoers and impostors will go from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. But as for you, continue in what you have learned and have become convinced of, because you know those from whom you learned it, and how from infancy you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith in Christ Jesus. 2 Timothy 3, verses 10 through 15. In the mid-1970s, I was in the Army, stationed in Alaska. I spent 2 years there and had some wonderful experiences. The Fairbanks Church was full of wonderful people that I dearly miss as we have gone our various ways. Some have gone on to rest in peace, waiting for the return of Jesus. In Fairbanks, I married my first wife, Shirley Schroeder, on New Year's Eve, 1974, during outdoor temperatures that went as low as 50 degrees below zero. The church was warm, but when we went to leave, the tires on our car were frozen flat on one side, so the car went thump, thump, thump until friction warmed them enough so they could become round again. That marriage lasted until she died 30 years later from chronic illness. That's a story for another time. I also attended jump school while I was there to become an airborne medic. The picture of me with this commentary was taken by a fellow paratrooper after we parachuted from planes in a midwinter drop, to be followed by a 25-mile hike. It was cold and exhausting, but what a great memory. Part of our readiness training also included daily trips cross-country skiing over two trails, one 5 miles long and the other 10 miles long. In the winter, the days were noticeably shorter, so those trips would usually be at night. The full moon's reflection, sparkling in the ice crystals clinging to the Arctic pines along the trails, made the entire trip seem like a fairy tale fantasy. An added joy was when the occasional Arctic fox would cross our path. They are beautiful creatures that manage to eke out a living capturing rodents burrowing under the snow. I had invited Christ into my life as a teenager, and I was so filled with joy at the experience that I shared that with everyone who knew me. Even in Alaska, this was true. God had been behind several miracles in my life. It would be impossible to recount them all in this little commentary, but I will share one of the biggest that happened while I was in Alaska. As a result of my sharing of my faith, some wanted to know more and eventually wanted to join the church. They wanted a relationship with the God who had spoken into my life. But in making those decisions, a few found that the choice would not be an easy one. Everywhere else I had been stationed, there was little problem. But Alaska presented unique challenges. Since Seventh-day Adventists observe the biblical Sabbath from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday, the shorter winter days presented problems. The duty day ended after sundown on Friday, not before. This had not been a problem for me, as God had granted me a company commander who allowed me a special dispensation to observe the Sabbath. The military regulations allowed him to do this. But once individuals from other units begin to ask for similar accommodations, it set off a firestorm. At this point, some added background is necessary. We had recently received a new battalion commander who felt that religion weakened his fighting force. He therefore set up a goon squad of burly sergeants in the S4 supply section of the battalion to deal with religious individuals in the battalion. The first person to fall victim to their assaults was a private who was Holiness Pentecostal. His affront was that he believed it was indecent to unbutton the top button of his uniform, as was standard practice. He strangely fell down the stairs a few times and then disappeared. I knew him, but was unable to find out anything about where he went. The next person they targeted was a specialist E4, a Jehovah's Witness. They convinced him to publicly renounce his faith. Then they began to target me. I was a specialist E5, and I scored highly for promotion to Staff Sergeant E6. But when I went before the promotion board, every single member of the board was a sergeant from the S4 Goon Squad. They told me that since I was a Seventh-day Adventist, they would deny my promotion no matter what, trying to get me to renounce my faith like they did with the last guy. However, my faith meant more to me than becoming Staff Sergeant, so I refused. Then the real persecution began. They did their research well. They discovered that Adventists do not eat pork, so bacon started showing up in everything they could put it in the battalion mess hall. As a result, I petitioned my company commander for separate rations, which would allow me to buy and prepare my own food in my room. Since he was sympathetic to my faith, even attending my wedding and rejoicing with me, he willingly approved the request. This thwarted their efforts to a degree until they realized that since I was a field medic, they could do this to the food when I was out in the field, on exercises with the airborne company that I supported medically. At first, this happened on short trips, which did not prove a major problem and allowed me advance notice of their intent. I began to fill my pack with freeze-dried food and study the edible native plants. This last change earned me the title of Bugs Bunny with the company. We joked about it, but the battalion commander's intent was serious and potentially deadly. Eventually, we left on a summer exercise that was too long for me to be able to carry enough food to sustain myself. I subsisted on white bread, milk, and what plants I could forage. This went on until I grew weak enough that I had difficulty keeping up with the company from weakness and exhaustion. Eventually, we got word that we would be bivouacking in the middle of a glacier. I knew I would not be able to forage for edible plants on the ice, but there appeared to be no options for me. I prayed. As we were slowly descending the slope to the glacier, I was hit in the head with a boulder from above. I nearly went unconscious and was evacuated to the field aid station, where they told me it was nothing and sent me back to the glacier. Today, 50 years later, I still have a slight divot in my skull from the impact of the boulder. I cannot prove nefarious intent behind the boulder, but I also have a hard time believing it was just a coincidence in view of later events. When I returned, the company was doing rappelling exercises down into a deep, icy crevasse. They invited me to join in, something I usually did because I loved rappelling. But after the boulder incident, I passed, especially considering my weakened state. When it came time for the evening meal, bacon was again in everything. I had some bread and milk instead, but they limited me on that, telling me that they did not bring enough for anyone to have more than one of each. I sat down on a boulder embedded in the ice and ate and prayed. I could see about a quarter mile distant the greenery at the edge of the glacier. Since it was early summer, I knew I could find more calories there. The entire day had been overcast. The sun had not broken through at all. I was not sure what to do, so I prayed that if God wanted me to walk to the edge of the glacier to forage, to let me see the sun. At that exact moment, the clouds parted and the sun shone down on me on that boulder for about an entire minute. Then the clouds closed back up and obscured the sun again. I felt I had no choice but to walk to the edge of the glacier, since God made it so clear. They must have been watching me because I had only gone about 30 feet when a helicopter took off from the base and landed by my path. A captain got out and ordered me back to base. I told him I was just going to forage for some food. He angrily got back in the helicopter and flew the short hop back. Eventually, several of my friends from the airborne company came and begged me to return. The captain had threatened them with harsh punishment if they did not bring me back. Out of consideration for their well-being, I went with them. Once we returned, the captain placed me under armed guard in the helicopter and flew with me to the S-4 supply camp. Seeing the goon squad prepared for my arrival, I told the captain I was aware of what they had done in the past to others and that he would be held responsible. He called the head sergeant over and told them not to touch me. As ordered, I chopped a little wood for the sergeants while waiting for what was to happen next. Eventually, a lieutenant wearing a sidearm arrived to take me into custody. The lieutenant was a friend and told me he was sympathetic. When we arrived back at Fort Wainwright, he turned me loose to go home. When I arrived home, I discovered my wife and the youth of the church were gathered praying for me, sensing that something was wrong. Seeing I had gotten skinnier, we went to the bathroom scale and discovered that over the short period of the past week, I had lost a significant amount of weight. But God intervened. God speaks into the lives of those who seek his presence, and we were all seeking him during that challenging time. A week later, when the entire battalion had returned, I was summoned for a field grade Article 15 punishment board. At the board, the true reason behind what was happening came out. The battalion commander reduced me in rank one level and stated that if I ever observed the Sabbath again, I would be taken in chains to Leavenworth, Kansas, the military prison, to serve out a sentence there. I felt like Joseph before Potiphar, threatened with a terrible fate because I chose to be faithful to God. However, this is not ancient Egypt, and I had other options. I contacted the Department of the Army by phone in Washington, D.C. A colonel there took the time to listen to my story. I explained that I was an airborne medic and Vietnam veteran with an exemplary record, and I only wanted to serve my country. But now that the war was over, my country seemed no longer interested in that service. I asked him what I should do. He suggested reassignment to a different unit. My company commander had already tried that, and the battalion commander denied it. Then he suggested an honorable discharge from the Army as a conscientious objector. My company commander had also tried that, but battalion tore up the paperwork when it arrived. Then, angered by that, he said to send it up again with the Department of the Army seal on it, and if they destroy it again, they will go to prison. My company commander did as instructed. Once that paperwork hit battalion headquarters, it was like a bomb went off. Immediately, the battalion commander called the medical platoon and ordered the lieutenant to instruct me to provide medical support for the battalion artillery battery, which was headed 150 miles out into the tundra for an exercise. This was alarming for several reasons. First, battalion never requested medics by name. Second, I was the medic for the airborne company, not the artillery. Third, that far out into the Alaskan wilderness, accidents had been known to happen. And fourth, I was given no time to get supplies for the trip. However, God had other plans. As I was on the tarmac helping the artillerymen push the heavy howitzers onto the Chinook helicopters, my lieutenant came running across the pavement with an aid bag. I thought he was bringing me additional medical supplies. When he got to me, he threw the aid bag at one of the artillerymen and said, "You get to be your own medics on this trip." And he turned to me and said that the Department of the Army had given the battalion 24 hours to get me honorably discharged from the Army, and led me back home to pack and begin processing for discharge. As I left the artillery unit, who all knew, as did the rest of the battalion, what was going on, I said, "See how God cares for those who trust in him?" As a result of my experience, several men in the battalion gave their hearts to God. Some have become close friends. Several others through the years, not associated with the events, have also given their hearts to God when they have heard my story, which was really a story to God's glory, not mine. I have only scratched the surface of what took place in Alaska and how God spoke into my life several times. But I'm filled with joy if anything I went through led others to seek salvation in Christ. I hope to see them all one day. The reason I shared this story is to illustrate that a winning attitude is not based on winning every contest that presents itself to us. It is based on humbly submitting ourselves to be used according to God's will. We may make plans on how we expect life to go, but if we let God direct, even if it prevents the fulfillment of personal desires, we will find that what he speaks into our life will be glorious beyond what we would have had if we had doggedly pursued our own agenda for happiness. God, who created us, knows us so much better than we know ourselves, and he knows the purpose behind our creation. A desire to walk in that purpose according to his will is the true winning attitude. Thank you for listening to this commentary. You may find other commentaries at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. May God bless you and your family.